Let me just say that this is the second case for the
telescope. I would say there are two ways that one can go about building a telescope and an observatory. The one way is to become acquainted with somebody with an extreme amount of money they don't know what to do with, and then hire the job done. And that is the way that most telescopes, professionals, are done. But I had, for some reason or other, probably due to my background, I didn't have any esprit de corps with rich people. But I did have with people like Michael Wayne and Thorpe and Bruce and those fellows. I knew how to talk their language. I knew how to get acquainted with them and get them interested in doing things. So I decided that that was the way to build our telescope, was to do it ourselves and get the people who had the ability, like Bruce, Michael Wayne, Johnson, so on, to get them to do the work and donate their time in return for a promise, which I was very glad to make, of being able to use this telescope when it got built. So we started, of all things, we got our glass in the fall or early winter of 1937. And the university then allowed me to have a room in the Phillies building, which was now the education building on 3rd Street. You may know that that was changed at one time as a Phillies building. And I had a room which was shared by Speed School for their water research in the basement. And we met once a week, the 12 of us. In the first meeting, by the way, I had the president. President Kent was in the meeting in 1937. He was there. I had a picture of him, but unfortunately that picture got burned up. We had took a picture of the group, and we got plenty of publicity in the Louisville Courier and Times and so on. And we started our mirror-making problem. Clark built the machine, a 20-inch mirror, too big to do by hand. And so Thorpe was responsible for building a machine to do the mirror grinding with it. And Charles Bruce did help on designing the mounting. And but the mounting design was done mostly by Wilbur Johnson and Kenneth McElwain. And I dragged my feet very much on having these people spend their time and energy in building the mounting. I said the most important part of a telescope is the mirror, and we better make a mirror first that's satisfactory, and then you fellows go ahead and build the mounting, because you can do it. And as I shall show you in a minute, we did it. And so we met once a week, and usually we would spend about half an hour talking about what we were going to do. Then we'd work maybe for an hour or less, and then we'd spend maybe another half hour discussing what we should have done instead of what we did do, and so on. Each one of 12 people has a different idea of what needs to be done in doing work of that sort. Well, I was thoroughly enjoying myself, and I met every day. Some of the 12 didn't come every time that we had the meeting. And in 1947, about 10 years later, some of the gang, I'm getting ahead of myself. A little bit before that, we had to move out of the Phillies building because the speech school needed the space where we were meeting. And of course, we occupied that with our grinding machine, and therefore took up the space, and they couldn't use it in the daytime. So I had to find some other place. And about that time, somebody, I can't remember who it was, down in the Louisville Free Public Library, was interested in what we were doing. Oh yes, I do remember. It was the daughter of one of the men who was one of the 12, and I can't remember his name now. I think she's still down there. She runs the radio program for the Louisville Free Public Library. Been doing it for quite a while. I just don't recall her name offhand right now. Anyway, she got the Louisville Free Public Library to give us a room in the old Montserrat school building, which housed the museum at that time, after it had been in the 1937 flood down on Broadway. No, it wasn't on Broadway, on Yard Street, where it was. And the museum was in a pretty bad state of repair, on account of the flood. And the director at that time was a geologist, and very knowledgeable in that sort of thing. And he was trying to reconstruct the labels on all the museum pieces there. So they had room enough for us. So we moved down there. But less than I don't know how many meetings we met there. It wasn't very many. And I discovered that dust was a problem. That every time we'd work, and somebody walked overhead, the dust would fall down on their mirror and we'd get scratches. So I told the gang, I said, let's give up this room and we'll move our equipment out to my house in the basement and then I can protect it. So they all agreed. I thought they were going to continue working, but when I got it moved to my house, I lived 7 miles from the university. Meeting attendance fell off remarkably, and for a long while only Louis Aker and myself met out there to do this work on the mirror. And even finally Louis got so he wasn't coming up, and I finished it up by myself, the 20 inch in my basement out on Star Lake.
And how long did you work on
it? I finished the mirror in 2 years after I got it out there. And in 1949 then, I said to Wilbur Johnson and McElwain, we now have a mirror which is satisfactory for our purpose, and you fellows can go ahead and build the mounting. So they already had their plans. They've been working on it. At that time, I wish I could remember his name. He was like Mitch Miller. He was the county judge of Jefferson County at that time. This was 1949. And he was the lawyer for Smuts Foundry.
Yeah.
And he persuaded Mr. Smuts to do the foundry work for our telescope mounting. And so the mounting that's out at the observatory now is the one that was finally assembled after 2 years' work. The boys did it. These two fellows almost single-handedly. They had a little help, but not much from other people. But mainly Johnson and McElwain did the mounting. And McElwain, being associated with the Louisville Gas and Electric, was very insistent that he have a mounting which wouldn't jiggle. And so he made an excellent job of mounting the telescope. He made a very good mounting. We had a lot of help from different organizations. We had, of course, Central Glass, I told you about already. Then, when the mounting needed a gear to drive the telescope, Murphy Elevator in Louisville volunteered their services in cutting teeth on the gear which Smuts had made out of of bronze. He Smuts provided the material and the workmanship and everything and gave it to us, which I think is a very good thing. At the suggestion of the lawyer who I told you about, I wish I could remember his name, but I can't, who was county judge at that time.
Well, it could be found.
Hmm?
If anyone wanted to know, they could find it.
Well, anyway, then one of the other men was associated with a pipe company, a company that made pipe for boilers and so on, not too far from the university. Gosh, I can't remember. Or did I write it down here? No, I sorry, I didn't write it down. And now it slipped my mind, and I can't recall. They're an old established firm down around 7th Street, over on the other side of the tracks. Anyway, this firm volunteered to furnish the pipes, mm-hmm. which made up the part of the telescope mounting. And when they sent them out, they sent out just ordinary water pipe. And McElwain said, these aren't straight enough. And when the man who was president of that company, a man by the name of Cubaugh,
mm-hmm.
he wasn't president, but he was one of the high officials,
mm-hmm.
he said, well, heck, if you can't use those pipes, bring them back and we'll give you one or two of these.
Mm-hmm.
So this company, I wish I could remember, give their name, but I can't. This company gave us boiler tubing that we used for the pipes on the telescope. It was an open framework affair on the telescope itself. And so this was mounted, and McElwain and Johnson, while they were doing this from 1949, for 2 years it took them to build it, I undertook, we had a verbal agreement with the society that while the society, because of these people doing the work who were members of the Louisville Astronomical Society, the telescope would belong to the society. But since we had no place to put it, the university wouldn't provide a building down here. And so I said, I'll build a building out on my little patch of grounds. I got room enough, and it's a good sky. They'd been out there on several occasions looking for meteors and other things. In fact, the former secretary of the organization, Miller Chapinski, had met her boyfriend out there on the meteor program. The boyfriend wasn't at all interested in the meteor, but he was interested in Millie. So he'd come out, and the two of them would observe meteors at the time when the showers came.
Uh-huh.
And we did research on meteor astronomy for quite a few years. Then this all culminated then while Johnson and McElwain were building the telescope. I spent 2 summers building the observatory, and the only part of this thing that I had to buy, I couldn't find anybody who was willing to give me the necessary concrete box to build the building.
Uh-huh.
The rebels had given me the aluminum to build the dome, and but the concrete block part of it I had to pay for. And we had a fellow by the name of Smith who was a concrete expert, building, and he put in the floor. And we had the telescope mounting on a separate base, which I was very interested in because the juniors the Junior Astronomical Society, which was formed very soon after the Senior Society was formed, the juniors came out and dug the hole in the ground. I didn't do any digging. They dug the hole in the ground for this mounting, about 4 by 4 feet filled with concrete. I provided the concrete, but the juniors provided the muscle to dig the hole. So I got the building built at the same time that Johnson McElwain finished up the mounting. And those two men, I don't know whether anybody else helped them or not, but at least those two that I know of, came out and installed the telescope on top of the pier that I built for the telescope. And then we were in business. I had already run a north-south line and put the telescope up on the pier, and I already knew how to line up the telescope because I had experience with the Miller scope.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the lining up, and Johnson and McElwain did the screwing of the thing to get the thing shifted. It weighed half a ton or some more, and I don't know how they ever got it up on that pier, because I think I was teaching at the time when they came out and mounted it. They did that all by themselves. They didn't have any machinery to lift it or anything of that sort. They did it all by hand, like the people from the pyramid building that way. And they built up a framework and gradually got this mounting up on the framework, then moved it over onto the pier. Also, another interesting thing, I think, in regard to the building, we had an argument, I know, while we were building the building as to what kind of a door we'd put on it. And there was a 14-year-old boy who was a member of the Louisville Junior Society. I wish I could remember his name, but I can't. He looked at me, and we were arguing about whether we should have the door swing in or swing out. If it swung out, it would be caught by the wind. If it swung in, it would be in the way of observing in the telescope, because the building was only 17 feet in diameter, and the telescope used up most of the building, and the dome was on top of this concrete cement block there that I had built up. And he looked at me kind of funny and said, "Well, why don't you make a round door?" And immediately I saw the prospect, and on the basis of the advice of this 14-year-old, I built a round door out of aluminum. Reynolds gave me the aluminum for building it, and built it and put it on a track. And I couldn't find anywhere in Louisville that they had a round track, and so I built a track out of channel iron to mount this. No, it was out of two angle irons.
Mm-hmm.
And I built a track going around like this with rollers on it that would go around on the inside and carry this door around. So it never got outside of it went outside the building, but it wasn't very far out and never got caught by the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put the telescope in the building, and then in I don't remember if it was 1951 or 52. It could have been as late as 1953, but one of those 3 years, we had a dedication out there, and we had a lot of people come out, and we dedicated our telescope. And I immediately, being a teacher more than anything else, rather than a researcher, I didn't attempt to put in any equipment on the telescope except things that look through. But I was interested in several youngsters at that time. I don't remember their names. I remember some of the later ones, but I don't remember the first ones. And these youngsters were the ones that had dug the hole in the ground. And so I gave them keys to the observatory. And they could come and go as they wished. They were high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to brag at that time that this is probably the largest telescope in the world in which high school junior seniors and sophomores had access to it and could come and go and do whatever they pleased with the telescope. I just let them do it. And if anything went wrong, well, I fixed it. And I enjoyed it, and they enjoyed it. And they did their own. Well, later, we had one man that I shall certainly mention because he is now director of the University Observatory. He was a sophomore or junior, I don't remember which, at the time when he entered this junior society and rapidly developed an interest in astronomical research at that age. And he was very active. Those kids would bring out sleeping bags, for example. They would sleep until something happened that they wanted to observe. And they'd get up and observe. They had an alarm clock and all that. And this one man that you will know because he's now in the faculty of the physics department, he was one of the juniors. That was John Kilcoff. And Kilcoff, I had at that time had developed a machine shop on my own. I played with it. I didn't do any serious machining. But I told these kids, I said, now if there's any machine work you want done, let me know. You provide the material and I'll do the machining for you. It wouldn't cost you anything because both of these kids were not wealthy. They didn't come from wealthy people. And I remember doing some work for Kilcoff. And one of the best drawings that I had from any of the youngsters that he gave me to draw, whatever it was, I don't remember anymore what it was. He probably would, but I don't. And so that was my introduction to John Kilcoff, who came later as a student here at the university. And he never did take any courses from me. He took all these courses from Dr. Stevenson. And but I had this contact with him in astronomy and got him interested in astronomy. And even though he was a physics major, he's now a real top-notch research astronomer, in addition to being director of the observatory.
And he's using that well,
that's getting ahead a little bit. But that was my main interest, really, in the observatory. I belonged to an organization called the American Association of Variable Star Observers, but I rapidly found out when I joined the organization, I tried using the 20-inch on variable stars. And then I discovered, I could have known it, of course, that the biggest job was not observing the star, but was finding the darn thing. And it took me so much time to find the stars that I was interested in observing with the help of the AAVSO people who were based, by the way, at Harvard Observatory. And at that time, they since were kicked out of Harvard and now got an independent thing in Cambridge, near Harvard, but they're not at Harvard Observatory. Well, anyway, I was interested in the work that these students were doing. And there was another student by the name of Richard Gott. You may have run onto him in the research with the university because he was one of the outstanding students that some research that was publishable while he was still a senior. And he'd done some very remarkable things in astronomy since. Of course, Kilcoff was mainly interested in research. He's also interested in teaching, but research is his main interest. My main interest in astronomy was never, I really shouldn't call myself an astronomer because I'm not. I mean, I don't do research in astronomy except on a minor scale. I don't do any publishing or anything of that sort. And mainly because I'm not interested in it. Let's be frank about it. I probably could do it if I had the interest, but I don't. I'm more interested, I'm a gadget builder. That's how I fit in over in the physics department right now, because I dearly love to build gadgets. And I'm doing it now for part-time at the University Physics Department shops. Doing most of my work, by the way, for John Kilcroft. He comes to me with things that he wants to build for the observatory, and I've helped out on that. And so this really winds up, I think, my main interest. By the time I get through with this interview, that name of that pipe company is going to pop into my head, I'm sure, because I can feel my brain going round and round trying to round up that name.
I had a couple of other things to ask you, and we could either do it today or you come back, however you want.
I think I'm through with the astronomy now. We're down to the present time. Okay. Oh, no, we're not through yet. Just one more item. After about 10 years or so out there, 1952 or 3, when we dedicated the telescope, and it was sometime during 1960, or I retired in 67, so I know it was before then. No, it was after then, because that's when we moved the telescope. Anyway, the Louisville Sprawl building folks, they came out and built two large, it was a different organization, of course, built two large subdivisions. One of them to the west of it, and the other to the east of it. And then a neighbor of mine, who lives right next to the observatory grounds, he decided to put up a mercury vapor light.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, and he would turn it on when the sun set, and then astronomy became not too good at Star Lane.
Yeah.
That's how Star Lane got its name, by the way, is the observatory out there.
Did you name it, or did someone else?
No, Mr. Aker did.
I see.
But he lived on Star Lane at the time. He's later, but he lives in Star Lane, and he got the authorities to call that lane Star Lane.
Yeah.
When I moved out, I was the only one on Star Lane. Now there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are 5 families.
Uh-huh.
6 families on Star Lane.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 15-foot right-of-way, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get water up there because of the fact that the roadway is only 15 feet wide, and the Louisville Water Company won't put in water unless you have at least a 30-foot right-of-way. And
let me ask you, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. How did Starling get its name? And one of the other ones was, more than once that you had many photographs and letters that were burned when your house burned.
That's right.
And can you say just a word about when the house burned?
I'd be glad to. There's the things I can't prove.
Yeah.
This subdivision to the west of us, we had a season of real dry weather for about 2 months.
Uh-huh.
Extremely. And at that time, I was living in a log house, and I was very much interested in having woods up close. So I had the woods to the west of me, which were mine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I owned them. I had 12 acres out there. I had the woods come within about 15 feet of the house. And this subdivision was on the other side of my property.
Uh-huh.
And there's a man that was building a subdivision, and one of his workers went out there one afternoon in a 40-mile-an-hour wind and started burning trash that had accumulated in the building.